3 days later, Pharaoh Troc Uruk arrived at Avaris, his military capital in the Lower Kingdom, and immediately plunged with indefatigable energy into securing to his own hand all the affairs of state and the trappings of power. The populace was delirious with joy at the news of the Treaty of Hathor, and at the promise of peace and prosperity in the years ahead. However, there was some puzzlement and dismay when one of the first acts of the new pharaoh was to put in hand another massive, enforced draft of men for the army. It soon became clear that he was intent on doubling the size of his infantry regiments and building 2,000 more fighting chariots. The question was asked, but not to Troc's face, where he expected to find a new enemy, now that Egypt was once more united and at peace. The loss of working men from the millet fields and the pastures to the army resulted in a shortage of food and a sharp increase in the prices in the markets. The expenditure on new chariots, weapons, and military equipment necessitated an increase in taxation. There were mutters now that Apepe, despite his warmongering, taxation, and contempt of the gods, had not been as bad a ruler as they'd believed him to be. Within weeks, Troc ordered work to commence on the extensive enlargements and refurbishment to the palace in Avaris, into which he intended to move with his bride, Princess Mintaka. The architects estimated that these works would cost over 2 lakhs of gold. The muttering grew louder. Well aware of the rising discontent, Troc met it with the proclamation of his own divinity and elevation to the pantheon. Work was to begin within the week on the construction of his temple on a choice site alongside the magnificent temple of Seuth in Avaris. Troc was determined that his temple would exceed that of his brother god in splendour. The architects estimated that the completion of the temple would require at least 5,000 labourers, 5 years, and another 2 lakhs of gold. The revolt started in the Delta, where a regiment of foot who had been unpaid for over a year murdered their officers and marched on Avaris, calling on the population to rise and join them against the tyrant. Troc met them with 300 chariots near Manashi and cut them to pieces with his first charge. He emasculated and impaled 500 mutineers on stakes. Like a macabre forest, they decorated both sides of the road for half a league beyond the village of Manashi. The ringleaders of the revolt were roped to the back of chariots and dragged to Avaris to state their grievances. Unfortunately, none of the prisoners survived the journey. By the time they arrived, they were barely recognizable as human. Their skin and much of their flesh had been ripped away as they were dragged over the rough ground. Ragged pieces of flesh and splinters of bone were scattered over 20 leagues of the roadway, to the delight of the pie-dogs, jackals, and carrion crows. A few hundred mutineers escaped the massacre and disappeared into the desert. Troc did not bother to pursue them beyond the eastern borders, for this petty matter had already occupied too much of his attention and delayed his wedding by months. He hurried back to Avaris, using up 3 pairs of horses in his furious impatience. While Troc was away, Mintaka had tried twice more to send a message to Taieta in Thebes. The first of her messengers had been one of the eunuchs of the harem, a fat, kindly black man she'd known all her life. There was a special bond between the eunuchs in both kingdoms that transcended race or country. Even during the years when the two kingdoms were split asunder, Soth, for that was the eunuch's name, had honoured his special tie to Taieta and had been his friend and confidant. However, Troc's spies were ubiquitous and unsleeping. Soth never reached Asyut, but was brought back in a leather bag, barely alive. He died when his head was plunged into a cauldron of boiling water. His skull, with the flesh boiled away, the bone bleached and polished, the eye sockets filled with orbs of lapis lazuli, was presented to Mintaka as a special gift from Pharaoh Troc. After that, Mintaka could not bring herself to recruit another messenger, and thus condemn him or her to a gruesome death. Nevertheless, One of her Libyan slave girls, Thana, who knew the depth of her mistress's love, volunteered to carry her message. She was not the prettiest of girls, for she had a cast in one eye and a large nose, but she was loyal, loving, and true. At her suggestion, Mintaka sold her to a merchant who was travelling to Thebes the following day. He took Thana with him, but 3 days later she was back in Avaris, bound by wrists and ankles to the side frame of a chariot of the border guards. Trok dealt with Thana on his return from Menashe. He condemned her to death by love, and she was given to the regiment that had led the charge at Menashe. Over 400 men took their pleasure with her until at sunset on the third day she bled to death. For 3 days, Minaka wept for her without cease.